On RN, I'm Cassie McCullough, and this is Life Matters. Now, would you put your mother in charge of your love life? Would you go one step further and give her control over your dating apps? Clay Skipper, a writer for GQ based in New York, did. His mother, Jessica, took over his Tinder account for a few weeks, and he wrote about the results. Did Clay find true love with his mother's help? We're about to find out because Clay and Jessica are joining us now. Welcome to Life Matters to you both.
Hi.
Thank you.
First to you, Jessica. Can you describe Tinder to people who haven't encountered it?
Tinder was something new for me. It's basically, I guess the millennials would call it a dating app. That's how it was described to me. But it's you basically have pictures of people and you swipe left or right, depending on whether you like the way they look or don't like the way they look. And if you like certain people and they like you, then you get a message that says you have a match, and then you begin a conversation.
And it's fair to say it's a flirty environment.
Oh, very flirty, yes. Yes, very flirty. I would say it's probably more about sex than dating, but I didn't realize that when my son first put me on it.
Okay. So when you did first encounter it, you'd bought 4 tickets to go and see this fantastic new musical called Hamilton, which has taken the US by storm. You bought 4 tickets, one for you and your husband, and one for Clay and someone that he might meet before the event. Clay, you clearly sound, just by the tone of your voice, like an attractive young man, 26 years old. You hadn't had a date for 4 years. What was going on in your life?
Well, no, I'd had dates. I just had not had anyone I'd really found a connection with. So, yeah, I was having fun being single in New York, but I figured, you know, if my mom wanted me to take a special someone to that Hamilton show, then, you know, I should put the onus of having to find that person on her. So I gave her the ideal platform for millennials. Like, I installed it on her phone and I, you know, let her have a field day.
Now, growing up, how kind of open were your discussions with your mum in the family about, you know, sex education and embarrassing things like that?
I would say not very open. I think my mom did a phenomenal job sort of giving me the direction I needed. I mean, we certainly had the sort of uncomfortable conversations that every mother and son have to have because she's a great mom and she did a great job raising me, but we definitely didn't go any deeper than we had to, I would say. So that was definitely conversations that this experiment made us have that we had not previously explored, I would say.
Okay, so what kind of discussions did you and Jessica find each other having?
Well, one of the first things she says, oh, you can go ahead, Mom.
Do you like to
take the question? Go ahead. No, I was going to say one of the first things she said when we were talking, she was like, you could get a lot of sexually transmitted diseases this way. And that, you know, in the piece, that's one of the first things because it's obviously a funny thing, but it's also sort of, I think, a universally uncomfortable conversation you don't want to have with your mom. And I think that my mom and I had never sort of had mature conversations about sex or intimacy or how those things are different. And you know, one thing I learned from this experience was that, like, your parents have an unbelievably vast wealth of knowledge that I think a lot of people my age are afraid to sort of tap into because it is not comfortable talking to your parents about those things. But they're the two people in the world who care most about you and have your best interest at heart. And so if anybody is in a position to give you the best advice possible, it's them. And so if I learned anything, it's like, you should probably talk to your parents more because they've been through this and they know what they're saying and it's useful.
Jessica, you had been through this, but in a very different time. I understand that you came from a religious family.
Yes, my father was a minister. My mother was a high school English teacher. And, you know, we had sex education in school, and then it wasn't really discussed. But, I mean, 36, 40 years ago, there were no Tinder apps, and good girls definitely did not flaunt sex, shall we say. So the whole Tinder thing was quite different than what I was used to when I first started dating.
Okay, now tell us, what were you looking for? Which were the girls that you didn't consign to soulmate oblivion?
Well, I was looking, first of all, for girls that didn't look like they were selling sex. I was looking for girls that were maybe fully clothed. I was looking for girls that maybe didn't have a drink in their hand. I was looking for girls that, I don't know, looked like they enjoyed something besides just partying. And
so you were setting the bar pretty high.
Well, that's what I would be looking for. I wouldn't be looking for sex right away. Well, I guess that was setting the bar high. I don't know. But that's what I looked for. And I looked, you know, if they had a dog in the picture, or they had, you know, I after I did it a few times, after I got over being discombobulated, I was like, we should start a conversation, you know, not just like, I got some really weird answers back that, of course, I didn't understand. But, you know, I tried to pick girls that, and then I tried to start a conversation as opposed to just like, why don't we meet at 8 o'clock? Because that's how I would approach a relationship.
Mm. And you discovered that asking more than one question at a time was, well, that didn't really work.
I guess not. I still don't understand why, but I didn't, you know, that seemed weird to everybody else, but hey, I ask more than one question at a time. It's like, you want to get information, that's what you do.
Have you got any explanation for that, Clay? Is it just bombarding the person?
Yeah, no, it's something about sort of our generation that I guess you do call it playing the game. But I guess the idea is that if you are, you know, sending too many questions or texts in rapid succession, it makes you look desperate, which I think is dumb. If, you know, if you want to talk to somebody, you should be able to talk to them. But it was what we would call being overly thirsty, and it has a negative connotation.
Yeah.
So I tried to warn my mom about that, but I think she learned the hard way. She just was firing off texts back to back to back, and I think she received the cold shoulder a number of times and had to learn the hard way, which is you know, a tough lesson to learn. But
and who knows?
To me, so
who knows who you might have missed out on because of that.
Yeah, exactly. I missed out
on
something.
I could be with my soulmate right now, but because my mom was being overly thirsty, we will never know.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. On Life Matters, we're talking with Clay Skipper and his mother, Jessica. Clay very bravely put his mother in charge of his Tinder profile and allowed her to select for him someone who may well be a soulmate. So eventually you did stumble across somebody, Jessica, who you thought might fit the bill.
Yes, I had two girls at different times. We had quite a little chat going, and so finally I thought, okay, now I guess I'll give them Clay's phone number, and so I did that. And I was a little hesitant to give out too much information because I'm like, I don't know how that works. Like, you don't want to put too much personal information out there. So I would text Clay and say, okay, now what do? I've said everything I can think of to say. Shall I give her your phone number?
I think these are the very tricky waters that generations are encountering and navigating. So, Clay, eventually you turn up to meet a young woman for a date. She thinks that she's been having a conversation with you, but in fact she's been interacting with your mother. Did you mention that?
No, I did not mention that. I went in with the intention of mentioning that and then sort of, not going to lie, just backed out halfway through and did not tell her that in the end.
So it didn't work. It didn't work.
The
attributes that your mother had selected didn't fit. What was the problem? What was the disconnect?
Well, I don't think it was literally my mom's fault. I think that this is sort of the nature of Tinder. Like, I've had conversations about this with friends. It's obviously a very superficial app. You're judging someone just based off their looks. You're actually talking with them in an actual real 3D physical environment. You can sort of gauge, do I have a connection with this person? Am I interested in this person? Do I want to explore further options with this person? But on Tinder, you don't really have those options. So, you know, my mom was using whatever resources she had at her hands to sort of gauge that, but you're not going to be able to get a real idea of that in a 2D environment. So I don't think it was my mom's fault. I think it was just that this was a girl that I did not have much in common with. And I think if I had met her at a bar or through a club or through work or something, we would have probably establish that a lot more quickly.
Well, as it turns out, you very quickly actually met somebody else and entered into a relationship, and so the game was off. But Jessica, yeah, looking back on it, what do you make of Tinder or just dating online in general?
Well, I'm glad I don't have to do that. I'm glad I didn't have to do that. It just seems like a very shallow, superficial way to meet people because there's no facial recognition. There's no social cues, really. You know, the internet, it's so very impersonal, and I don't know. It kind of makes me sad that that's the way young people are trying to meet.
And but it does expand your choices. Imagine if you're in a small town and you only met a small group of people in that time where you were looking for a partner. It does open up the world and many more possibilities.
Well, that's true. It definitely opens up the world. That is true. It's a good point. But in a way, it's also a little more scary because you don't really know who you're talking to, as we found out on the other end.
You could be talking to someone's mom.
Exactly.
That's right. Well, look, this story has no boundaries. I mean, this is of interest to people wherever they are around the world. I understand, Clay, that a French television network is chasing you.
Yeah, they have asked if I would come to France to be on their show. We have not yet decided whether or not I will do that, but that is still in the balance. I mean, it's a universal thing, right? It's something that everybody deals with, love and relationships, and then it's something that everybody has, a mom. So it's like seems to have struck a chord with a lot of people because I think it's something that we're all sort of, especially those of us in our 20s, are sort of pondering how to navigate.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I reckon you should give them one condition. I'm not going without my mum.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I definitely think that should be in that should be contingent on that.
Yeah. Jessica, Paris in the springtime. What more could you want in life?
I'm always happy to go to Paris.
And if she can't find me a match in Paris in springtime, then she's clearly not the matchmaker I thought she was.
That's right. All right, well, good luck, Clay, in finding your soulmate. Good on you, Jessica, for being such a great sport. And thank you to you both for talking with us today.
And thank you.
Thank you.
That was Clay Skipper, a writer for GQ magazine, and his mother, Jessica, who was put in charge of Clay's profile on Tinder. That's it for Life Matters today. I'm Cassie McCullough, wishing you all the very best for this Anzac Day weekend. See you next time.